Good morning, listeners, and welcome to an interesting episode of the Prayer Lines podcast, in which we will be detailing our mid-season review and award predictions with a little spin, and in that we're only going to focus on the Nashville Predators. But before that, we're coming off a nice All-Star break weekend, guys. Corey, how you feeling? Did you catch some of the All-Star festivities?
I did. I caught a little bit of the activities on Saturday night with my daughter. She was really into the skills parts of the event, and liked seeing Pekka do really well in the save streak part, which I thought was really nice. So we had a lot of fun.
Good. Yeah, I was pretty pleased with the performance of the two Predators players. There's of course it's a little controversial, the save streak. There's a lot of dissenting voices out there about Fleury getting it. And there's something about the format, and I, to be quite honest, didn't really understand the format. Rene made, you know, he stopped a shot from every player, but then the streak. Anyway, something about Fleury getting allowed to restart a streak and then keep going longer than Rene did. It was all a bit questionable. But yeah, I think we can all agree that Pekka Rene impressed, looked very good during the shootout streak. And George, I assume you caught most of the weekend's events.
Yeah, I mostly watched Sunday, but I like to think it wasn't about what I saw, but what I didn't see, and that was K-Rock. So,
oh yeah,
that was
the only
nice.
Only one song aired on television, so I was pleased with that as well. All in all, pretty pretty good. And we got to see an offside review.
Yeah, why would they have that? Why would you?
Because Wes Macaulay needed to have one highlight.
Well,
and I'm glad he did, because I got to watch Wes Macaulay call a review.
Not even the review, but why have icing and offsides in general?
I agree.
I'm of the mind of that the 3-on-3 is such a gimmick in itself. Just like, if you possibly could, throw power ups out there. Like,
yeah,
I know,
right.
It's not humanly possible, but it'd be incredible. Just make like the old 3-on-3 game. And
no, they should have like a, you know, like a I don't know, a hat you could pick up, and when you have the hat, you get like a 20-second power play.
Yeah,
I can see stuff like that.
Yeah, frozen.
I don't think any of those players
skater,
are out there.
Double goals.
I don't think any of those players are out there trying to hurt each other. So, like, I agree. I don't understand why you need like icing and offside and all that. I think just you know, put the best possible spectacle on television as you can. But that said, I did appreciate a Wes Macaulay no goal call.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Yeah. It seems like forever ago, but of course the Nashville Predators did have a couple games last week. With the Lightning in town, it's a hugely anticipated game, at least from where I'm sitting. Lightning coming into town on Tuesday night, and the Preds falling in overtime. And then Nashville going up and visiting Newark to play the Devils and getting it done with a 3-0 shutout win. Nice to see Pecorino getting the shutout on the road. And I think the other, speaking of interesting goaltending, UC Saros, of course, getting the start against Tampa Bay. And Corey, did you think that was the right decision to get Saros in there? And then beyond that, just, you know, what were your thoughts, if you can, feels like, remember way back almost a week ago to that Tuesday night game?
At this point, I'm not sure you can go wrong with either goalie in nets. I mean, the way that Saros has been playing of recent, he's been so good. I mean, even for his small stature, he seemed like he's playing very tall for his position. He's very quick going side to side and played very, very well. And the only real marks against the team in the first period, those two goals that Tampa Bay scored early on, were turnovers or bad positioning by the rest of the team put Saros in a very bad position. And so those were kind of fluky goals, really. So I have no problem with that decision. I think he played really, really well. The Predators had a great chance to win that game and just let it go at the end. I have no problem with that decision to start Saros in that game.
Yeah, I like Saros in that game as well, actually. I think he's been playing very well as of late. And also, again, coming off that bye week where Pecorini had about a week off and Saros had three starts in Milwaukee, that was just the right decision, not to throw Pecorini to the Wolves against the best team in the NHL. That was probably the best thing. Let him get a little bit of rest. And quite frankly, I thought the Predators' offense came to play, and the defense kind of was nowhere to be found. 13 high danger chances against for the Lightning or against the Predators rather is just, you know, if you think you're going to win games and give up 13 high danger chances, you got another thing coming. But otherwise, I thought the Predators actually controlled possession not terribly. They kept Stamkos pretty well contained as far as possession goes, although he did score 3 goals, including that last one, which was a bomb from that low circle kind of area where he's just not going to miss. So
yeah,
they have to do a better job of kind of containing those players and keeping them to places where they don't want to play, which is obviously easier said than done.
Yeah, I mean, as I wrote in kind of my recap of this game, I had an interesting takeaway from it in that I realized the Nashville loss, but I thought that they proved enough to me that they still have what it takes to really contend for the Cup. And I mean, that sounds ridiculous. This team is stacked and really should be contending for a Cup, but a lot of the performances this year I think have left some question marks. But this one, actually, I can't be upset with that overtime loss. Obviously, it's a shame, you know, they have the lead going. Once it seems like this story repeats itself all season, Nashville had a late lead, I think with fewer than 3 minutes in the third period remaining, and allowed Tampa to come back and tie it up and then take it in overtime. But, you know, I saw 100% effort from pretty much every line on every shift, which is extremely rare. And I thought, you know, should this become the Cup final series, I think it could easily go to 7 games. I still think Tampa looks like they have the edge, but you know, it could come down to in a playoff series, it's going to come down to who's got the better goaltender and, you know, just some puck luck. So I think it proved to me that Nashville is really within reach of the best teams in the league. So that was nice.
Although they were missing Hedman and Sergachev, which was...
Yes,
right. That's quite a duo to be missing.
Yeah. There were several Lightning players that I...
Go that ahead. Was the game where Louis Domingue was in, wasn't he?
Yeah, Nashville making Domingue look like a world-class goaltender.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some question marks. Just based on the on-ice performance, I think it was the best I've seen Nashville play in a long time. Everybody giving their all on every shift, which is just really nice to see because, for whatever reason, they don't do that very often. And then George, interesting that you mentioned 13 high danger chances against, because in the next game, Nashville went up to New Jersey and allowed the same number, and yet got the 3-0 shutout. And of course, give or take a tenth of a point, statistically speaking, allowing 26 high danger chances against in 2 games should create 6.5 goals against. So that speaks to the performance of both Saros and Rene in those 2 games. Nashville should have pretty much lost or allowed 3 goals in each of those games, and of course got the shutout in New Jersey. So Rene had a great night, really good to see, because I think George, you and I have talked about since the week off, I think Rene's looked a little shakier, perhaps coming back down to earth, which, you know, I think we could have all expected. And as with Tampa Bay, New Jersey is very injured, missing a lot of their kind of top goal scorers. So, and top goaltender, Nashville getting another kind of break, you might say, with a backup goaltender and a very green one at that. I think, pretty sure that was his goaltender's first start. Yeah, Corey, what were your thoughts on the shutout in New Jersey?
Well, I mean, I like the fact that the team scored first and got another win. I mean, that's a trend that we've been seeing all season long with them. If they get a goal first, they're typically going to win the game. And it looks, the one thing I like is we're seeing people like Matthias Ekholm and Victor Arvidsson and PK Subban step up and score in times where we've needed, you know, someone to step up. We've been missing Forsberg for a long time. We haven't been getting a lot of production on the forward lines as much as we want to. We get Kevin Fiala here and there. We get some other people come in here and there. But now we're starting to see some others kind of step up. And, you know, Subban's leading the team in points, I think, at this point in time. So it's good to see a full team producing. Limiting the penalties recently as well, which was nice. I think having that very green goalie helped him out quite a bit. But just seeing the contributions from across the team, everybody's starting to get involved. Everybody's starting to push forward. Aberg's going forward quite a bit and just trying to cause ruckus in the, And it's really starting to show that this team is putting pressure on the defenses of other teams, and that's a good sign.
Yeah, in the New Jersey game, I think you're right about Aberg. I think recently I've seen a lot more out of him, and he was probably one of the players that really needed to start stepping up or risk seeing a lot less of this roster. As far as the New Jersey game, it kind of fell into place a little more. Like in the Tampa game, the worst players on the ice from a possession standpoint were players like Ryan Johansson, PK Subban, Victor Arvidsson. You know, it was kind of your top line guys that were really struggling, it seemed, against Tampa. Against New Jersey, it was kind of the opposite. You see Victor Arvidsson leading the pack in terms of shot production. Players like you mentioned, Matthias Ekholm, Craig Smith getting up there. So it was kind of more of the business as usual. Very, very dark coloring around the net, so still allowing quite a few of those chances right in front of the goaltender. But that said, Nashville actually did produce quite a fair number as well. They actually matched New Jersey with 13 high danger chances. So a better offensive effort, certainly. They're, you know, it's just, and I realize I'm talking about a shutout here, so this might seem a little ridiculous, but they still got outplayed in terms of shot attempts, and I just wonder what that's all about. You know, I watch Tampa play, and I think they do that almost intentionally. They will happily ride the wave of allowing shot attempts from bad areas before going and doing the damage, and I don't think Nashville's doing it on purpose. It seems like they're just allowing shots because they don't really have a choice. But as I said, it's kind of hard to argue with a 3-0 shutout, especially to kick off a nice few days off for the All-Star break.
I kind of like your thought there about, you know, accepting low danger and chances and just kind of allowing those shots to happen. And I 100% agree with you that that could be a strategy if it weren't for the bright red volcano around the net.
Right, exactly.
Where a lot of those are just high danger chances, and it's not good. It really isn't. And a team where it was NHL goaltender's first ever start, and without Taylor Hall, they shouldn't have given up this much offense. But again, it's hard to complain when they won 3-0.
I know, and they won't fix anything because they won 3-0. So, and I don't want to, you know, this is a Predators podcast. I don't mean to keep talking about the Lightning, but. I watched their game. They played the Blackhawks the night before they came to Nashville, and I was just absolutely floored by their performance, because in every way it looked like Chicago was the better team in that game until you kind of look back. Chicago lost 2-0, and afterwards you kind of look back on things and kind of, you know, debrief the game, and you realize that was Tampa's strategy all along. They will happily let Chicago skate around the perimeter, try to get through the neutral zone. But the second that puck tries to go through a high danger area, tries to go through the slot, whether it's a pass or a player carrying the puck, it's going to be a turnover or at least a disrupted play. And I just wish so badly that Nashville could get that coaching or that mentality or whatever it is, because I think Nashville has a better defensive group than Tampa Bay. I don't think that's too controversial of a statement. You know, on paper, I think Nashville has a better defensive roster, but for whatever reason, like you mentioned, that high danger area, that low slot, is just such a glaring weakness. And I really, I'm kind of out of answers if I ever had any in the first place. It's just hard to watch that game and any of these Predators games and pick out a specific reason that they allow so many chances. And that actually does transition nicely. We wanted to do our kind of mid-season review. So although it is a bit past the mid-season, but you know, look back on the season so far, what we think has been going right, what has been going wrong, and to keep it consistent with this high danger thing, I just, out of curiosity, in 5-on-5 situations, Nashville is allowing the 10th fewest high danger chances against, which I was actually surprised. I figured they would be lower down. But they're producing the 4th fewest high danger chances, so that their ratio is actually, I think, maybe 21st or 22nd in the league. So not what you would expect from a team that's challenging for first in a very good central division. So Corey, what do you think offensively with that in mind, the fact that they're so low with high danger chances created, do you think there's something offensively that's going wrong? You know, are these lines correct, or is there still kind of room, or or is it just down to individual effort?
You know, that's a really good question. One of the things that bothers me about the offense is how often they rely on a defenseman out towards the blue line to fire a shot in and get a rebound. There doesn't seem to be a lot of motion going in towards the center of the ice, no types of gives and goes, nothing like that. I think it's just an offensive philosophy that is we're going to kind of create a screen around the goalie to kind of impede his view. We're going to take some shots, and then we're going to pounce on a rebound. I you know, with Tampa Bay, and I know we're going back to this again, you know, I've watched a few of their games this year, and they're tacticians on offense. They pass back and forth. You even saw it a couple times during the game versus the Predators where they would pass behind each other, create some space, and then find the open shot. It's more of an offensive philosophy, I think, of let's use our talented offensive production and their defensive players to create rebounds for us. And I think that's one of the reasons why we see less high danger chances. There's not a lot of drive to the net with Johansson or Forsberg or Arvidsson or even Turris, some other players. And we need to see more of that coming in the rest of the season, especially when everybody gets healthy and starts getting that chemistry rebuilt where it needs to be.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm of the mind that one of the things that made the Predators so successful in the playoffs and so successful in the regular season last year was that they had a defensive core that was so willing to jump in and so willing to kind of make plays, especially behind the net. And I think we saw it a little towards the beginning of the season, but we haven't really seen it since. Is a lot of the defense is just kind of content with staying back, which is by no means a bad thing. But when they were creating a lot of your offense, that can kind of be a good reason why this is drying up. I think a lot of it goes back to last season when Roman Josi was concussed, and he was concussed behind the net, and it was in the offensive zone. And since then, I think we've kind of seen a little timidness from him going back to that area. Matthias Ekholm as well. I've heard the joke many times that he was the best power forward on the team last year in the playoffs because his willingness to go into the corners in the offensive zone and just, you know, bang bodies and just kind of, you know, puck retrieval and to push the area. And that kind of cycle really threw defenders out of position. And just the ability to kind of move and not let defenders play a kind of man-to-man system, but also not let them play a zone system, often caught people out of place. And in doing so, they were able to create chances. And so now that they're just kind of, now they're not really moving and defensemen aren't really kind of, after they lead the rush, you kind of see them sag back and just start to, and just play normally. I think that's really hurting their offense. And I wonder if, I don't necessarily know if Forsberg's going to change that at all, but I wonder if that has more to do with the players or the coaching. And for my money, I would have to guess coaching.
Yeah, I think that's been kind of the common denominator for me is just it comes down to coaching. I think when you look at kind of each of the aspects of this team, offensively, I think they're relying a little too much. It's gotten better, but I think still relying too much on a power play, not getting it done quite as often in 5-on-5.
Well, defensively, Sean Tierney is this great writer and this great mathematician that does stats work. And one of the things I always see is after every night he'll update the expected goals for versus goals against at 5-on-5, and yeah, the Predators are continually giving up more or expected to give up more goals for than they score at 5-on-5, and it's purely by the power play that they've stayed afloat. You know, not even just stayed afloat, that they've stayed ahead in the division.
I think the goaltending has just been overperforming on every aspect.
They have a high danger saving percentage of like 89.84. I mean, geez, that's almost 90%.
So that's incredible. About 12% higher than league average. So pretty much in one in every, well, that's not really how math works. I'm trying to think of a different way to phrase that than just 12% more, but that's a lot. It's quite a bit higher than the league average. So goaltending has been good. Defensively, I think they've been Swiss cheese.
Offensively, there's only two teams higher in high danger save percentage. And it's the Dallas Stars and the New York Rangers.
Wow. So the Stars get it coming from her and his goaltending too. Yeah. Pretty much the best in the league. Coaching-wise, I think I don't know. I've never been a hockey coach. I've never really broken, like, I'm not good at hockey strategy. You know, I can break down what happened. It's hard for me to plan what should happen. But I can tell you there are issues with his coaching. I was hesitant to do that because I tend to kind of try to protect individuals on this team. I try to not be too, critical of individuals. But after this many games, when these issues have, if anything, gotten worse, you just got to wonder. I mean, the power play has deteriorated, in my opinion. And I don't know how that's possible. I don't know why the power play would be getting worse as the season progresses, unless teams have just figured it out. But it's just frustrating. It really is, because it feels a lot of the time like this team is a lot of untapped potential. We see the individual names on this roster, and you just think this team should be steamrolling their opponents. And more often than not, they're losing 4-3 in overtime because they gave up a very late goal, you know, that sort of thing. So, Corey, do you think the coaching staff needs to be held accountable for this? Is this on the players? And again, you know, as with everything, we're talking about a relatively successful team. And yet, the product on the ice, for me, is leaving a lot to be desired. So I'll ask you, do you think the coaching staff is to blame here? Is there anything to criticize? Am I kind of overreacting or what?
I don't think you're overreacting at all. I think this is just part of what the Predators are right now. You know, you're sitting here talking about the power play being, you know, being so much worse than what it used to be. Well, it's still third in the league overall. Right. I mean, it's incredible to sit here and we watch the games. We talk about the eye test. You're like, man, on paper, you look like you should be, you know, really taking it to the Arizona Coyotes, yet you lose in overtime. You know, it's just confounding. The one thing I will associate this with, and I always go back to my baseball roots, and I'm a big baseball fan. What the Chicago Cubs did this past year after winning the World Series, they kind of coasted that first half of the season, and then after the second half of the season, they really turned it on and made it to the playoffs, you know, won the division by several games. And, you know, it wasn't the season that we were hoping for as Cubs fans, but it was still when the time came, they turned it on. They were able to perform where we thought they were supposed to perform, what they're supposed to do. I don't know if the Predators can do that because they've never been put in that position before. And I'm kind of wondering if Laviolette said, hey, we're just going to squeak out some wins. As long as we win or we keep it close, as long as we're in position, you know, let's see what happens to the All-Star break. And then after the All-Star break, we're really going to start hammering in. That's a bad way to go. And I really, you know, I'm not a hockey coach. I have coached other things throughout my life. I've been in charge of 8 people to 300 people on a field doing stuff, you know, so I've got some experience in the leadership. That's not a great way to go if that's what he's doing. Thing is, I don't see enough change from game to game. I don't see enough adjustments throughout the season to make me think that they're really actively working to build a better team and build them for the Stanley Cup final.
You're right. It is a very dangerous, if that is indeed the strategy, and I tend to think it's not. I would think that an NHL team is trying to, you know, be as competitive as possible every single night. Because that just leaves a lot of room, you know, if for example, Philip Forsberg gets injured again, you know, things like that, or God forbid, Pecorine, you know, you don't want to be squeaking by and then putting it all on the line if something like that could happen. I think, and that's the thing that really is blowing my mind, is a lot of these issues seem very obvious. And you mentioned that their power play is the third best in the league, which to me is incredibly frustrating. Because, you know, and I've looked at, I rarely look at power play stats, but I have, you know, I broke it down because I really did want to understand how it's third in the league if it looks as bad as it does. And they're pretty much middle of the pack or below average in every individual category when it comes to the power play. And that's, you know, high danger chances, the number of shots they're producing per power play. Every, you know, down to even the details like that where they're just not shooting enough. And I'm not the guy that's sitting in the stands yelling shoot, believe me. In fact, I tend to think I'm the opposite of that guy, but it blows my mind. And I feel like this power play could be a runaway best in the league. If it's third best right now and it looks that bad, imagine if they fix the issues, how good it could be. But I think it extends beyond the power play. I think the defense has just been my biggest question mark. I don't understand how they're allowing so many chances against, high danger chances And George, I think you've been particularly critical of the defensive abilities, and I will stress the defensive abilities of players like Roman Josi. You know, do you think this comes down to an individual player thing, or is that coaching? You know, I'm just trying to get you guys' take on who should we be pointing these fingers at.
Well, and I'm going to sound kind of pretentious when I say this, so bear with me. As a scout, one of my things that I like to do is just kind of break down systems and see how that might affect players. And I, for the life of me, am having trouble figuring out what exactly the defensive zone system is. Because I know offense is usually a read and react kind of system where they talk about, you know, get into a cycle if you want to, or, you know, work the puck up high and then get to the net, or, you know, just work it down low and, you know, get people out of position. But usually it's not very set up. But defense, on the other hand, is where systems actually matter and where not having people in the right system can result in terrible plays and goals against. And for the life of me, I can't figure out what is going on when Roman Josi is on the ice. And this was the same when he had Matisse Ekholm. It's the same now that he has Ryan Ellis on with him as well. And when it's PK Subban and Matisse Ekholm out there, I know exactly what's going to happen. Subban or Ekholm is going to follow a player into the boards or into the corner to try to retrieve the puck, and then the center is going to support. And if it's a real puck battle, what will happen is the other defender, usually Matisse Ekholm, will kind of act as a buffer or a layer, and will keep himself between the puck and the net, but be closer to the puck just in case it does pop out, he can jump onto it. With Roman Josi and Ellis or Roman Josi and whoever, Yossi's in the corners regardless of who's in front or who's already in the corner. And it's just so frustrating to see after that what happens is that just kind of everything goes crazy. And sometimes it works, and sometimes the puck squeaks out to Josi or to Matisse Ekholm or to whoever's in the center, and, you know, the puck's going down the ice. But most often than not, the puck squeaks out to one of the forwards who's outnumbering, and then the opposition usually gets a quality shot because there's someone in front of the net that really has no one on them. And it's not just Roman Josi's fault, but I think that his play is part of the issue. And obviously that third line or what used to be that third line, third pairing, is absolutely atrocious.
I've noted, you know, I think you're probably talking more about kind of your typical zone entries or defensive zone coverage. I've noticed that sort of thing on the more high profile kind of chances, like a odd man break or a breakaway, where it seems like Roman Josi will always pinch, that he and his partner will always go to the same man. You know, if it's a 2-on-2 or a 3-on-2, they'll both attack the puck carrier, which obviously leaves a lot of ice exposed for whoever's trailing. And, you know, as much as I commend Josi on his ability to create offense and his carry the puck through the neutral zone and into the offensive zone, I agree. I think, surprisingly, I think, you know, you might look at that roster and think, well, Yossi's kind of a known quantity, he won't be a question mark. But I think defensively, I've noticed some of these same issues from Roman Josi. And, you know, as the old cliche goes, your best players need to be your best players. And to have the captain of your team, a defenseman, be kind of one of the weak links on defense is really puzzling. Unless that's just the system that they've created, is that they value his ability to transition so much that they're going to, you know, decrease the responsibility defensively. I'm not really sure.
Well, I think part of the issue too is Ryan Ellis' play, and I think that we've all seen him offensively and how well he's done, and, you know, he's really fit in like a glove on offense. He's been perfect, but his game on defense needs quite a bit of work, and you can tell that he's still kind of figuring it out. And that's okay. He missed 40 games in the season, and he came back from a significant injury. Like, it's going to take some time for him to get back. That being said, once he comes back, I think that Josi pair is going to be much better defensively once he can kind of control. I saw him get beat in the corners a few times, and it's just very uncharacteristic for someone like Ellis, who, being so small, is actually quite a dominating force physically. Yeah. So I think that things will get better once he gets more back into the swing of things on defense, but until then, they have to find a way to stop the leaking.
It's, you know, it seems like we tend to criticize, so just to balance things out and perhaps be a little more lighthearted. Corey, why don't you tell me something that's going right with this team?
You know, you could sit there and point to the goaltending all day, every day now. I mean, at the beginning of the season, Staros was kind of a liability, and we were kind of questioning whether or not he was ready to take over for Rene. Rene was playing spectacular hockey, and they're both doing really, really well. But, you know, I want to highlight some other things, though. You know, we started to see Craig Smith be a really good hockey player there for a while, and he's been kind of – he's kind of taken a step back or two recently, and maybe that's part of the lineups that he's facing or the having Kevin Fiala off the line with him and Turris. But we've seen some players step up that we weren't expecting to step up. So, I mean, whether it was Craig Smith or it's been Kevin Fiala, which has been a fantastic goal scorer for the team, Kali Yarncroke, it's just been a lot of team play. And I think in a game where, yes, you need some star players, you need your Connor McDavids, your Sidney Crosbys, you need some of those guys around, you've got a really good team here that's playing together pretty well. Once they get all their little holes figured out and everything fixed, it's going to be a really dangerous team come playoff time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I was looking at Craig Smith last year, you know, watching last year, and Craig Smith was essentially invisible. If he had a chance, he would miss. It was amazing. Looking at over the course of his career, I think we should have always expected him to bounce back. Last year was just such an anomaly, such a down year for him. And so, yes, you're right. He's been great, and I think that he's been more of the player we should expect Craig Smith to be. And then I would mention, you mentioned Kali Yarncroke, and I think along those lines, I think the third and fourth lines that have been basically a defensive group of forwards, I think have actually performed pretty admirably. We talk about Yarncroke's ability as a two-way center, a defensive forward, and he's been great, I think. And points-wise, I think this is set up to be pretty much his best season of his career. I think he's within reach of his career point or his season point total, and he, you know, we obviously still have quite a few games left. So I think, I agree. The depth players we've been wanting to see step up, I think, have stepped up, and then obviously mentioned the goaltending, which pretty much goes without saying. The goaltending has just been superb. And George, is there anything we haven't mentioned that you'd like to throw out there too for something that's going well this year?
Kevin Fiala, I mean, I know you guys talked about him, but I just wanted to second that. He's just been so good, and he's going to be so great. And when the next expansion draft comes in 2020 or 2021, the Predators are going to have a really tough decision to make between keeping him or Arvidsson. So that'll be fun.
Well, and I think they've confirmed that they will have Seattle will have the same expansion rules as Vegas, and obviously Vegas has built quite a good team, at least in the short term. So,
well, of course they had their pick of all stars.
Oh my God,
Jesus.
And then I guess I can't think of a really good segue, but on a more lighthearted note, talking about, as I mentioned kind of at the start, we wanted to do some of these mid-season awards. So, you know, all the individual player awards of the NHL gives out every year. Of course, in this version, we would imagine them only being given to Predators players. So the first one, and before you, please don't write hate mail, that I realize this is a misuse of this trophy, but the Calder, which we are defining as the first year with the Nashville Predators, not a rookie, but a first year with the Predators, and I'll get us started. I have got Kyle Turris, who I think has sort of done his part to shape the identity of the team this year and just cemented the fact that they have solved the center depth issue. Cooled off quite a bit recently, but I think in terms of possession, he's still been a very solid second line center every night, and obviously kind of unlocked Kevin Fiala and Craig Smith. So I'm going to give that my quote unquote Calder to Kyle Turris. And Corey, why don't you lay your pick on me?
Well, you know, I'm going to go something rather unconventional here. I'm going to go with Scott Hartnell.
First year back with the Preds, right?
Well, he is first year back, and yeah. You know, one of the things I saw from him that I really liked early on was when players on the opposing team were starting to mix it up with like Victor Arvidsson or a younger player, Hartnell was right there in the middle to like be like, no, you're not going to bully my boys around. You're just not going to do it. And, you know, he's got his 7 goals. He's only got a few assists, but he's been willing to really mix it up a little bit this year. And I think that's been a really great player for the team to have on those second and third lines as we've progressed this season. Just that veteran presence and that willingness to be tougher at times.
That's a good choice. I actually totally spaced on Hartnell because, like you mentioned, he has been a Predator before, but of course this is his first year back in quite a while. I'll probably never forget the breakaway goal he had against Arizona a couple weeks ago, and I just remember thinking, "Oh, this is already the weirdest game I will see this year if Scott Hartnell is scoring the breakaway goal." And then George, who's your quote unquote Calder first year with the Preds pick?
Alexi Emlyn.
Huh.
No, I'm joking. It's Kyle Turris.
Yeah. Okay, thank God.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd love to hear your explanation of that.
Yeah. It's a little funny that we had to shape the rules to kind of incorporate actual players, because I don't think there's any rookie on this team, is there?
No, I don't believe so. I think Fiala's the closest thing they have, and he's not a rookie, so.
Yeah, I was going to say. So it's funny that we had to shape the rules, or reshape the rules, rather, and we still only have like 3 or 4 players that you can actually pick.
Right, yeah. Yeah, not a huge sample size there, I guess.
Otherwise, Brock Besser, fight me.
Right.
Yeah, Brock Besser for Calder.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. That guy, speaking of, I think did he take home $550,000 from this past weekend?
Yeah, I think
contract bonuses and... Yeah, so, yeah, good for Besser, and I agree. I think perhaps league-wide, I think maybe he'll be the winner of this Calder Trophy come the end of the year. The next one perhaps is a little, there are at least more options to pick from, is the Rocket Richard. So I would go with, I think Philip Forsberg. I realize he's missed about a month now, over a month actually, due to that injury. But I think we're on February Eve, or almost on February Eve. So normally all of his point production comes from 1 month. This year it's been a little more spaced out, but maybe he'll still turn it up. Next month, we'll see. So I would still give it to Philip Forsberg. Corey, are you got another choice there?
You know, I'm gonna go off the board again. I can't help myself here, but I'm gonna go Craig Smith.
Okay.
I think when you get Fiala back on that second line with Turris and Smith, it's going to open things up for that line a little bit more than what we've seen. So once Forsberg gets back and depending on what happens with all the lines, but I think putting Fiala back on that second line is going to be really handy for him, and we're going to see Craig Smith kind of step up the second half of the season and be a little bit more proficient in the scoring department.
And George, your pick for the Richard?
Pick from Richard would be Kevin Fiala, 15 goals in 45 games, and he's only getting better. He was notoriously snake-bitten to start the season, but his play is just incredible, and I think in my very non-expert opinion, he is the play driver. He is the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak. And we've seen it depending on no matter what line he's on, whether it's with Turris, even whether it's with Johansson, or whether it's with Yarncroke and Bonino, wherever he's at, points usually follow. And I don't know where they'll put him now that once Forsberg's back, but I think that wherever he's at is going to score the most goals.
I sort of hope that they just go back to their normal. Y'all might disagree with this, but I think first line Jofa, second line Smurf. I think that's just. I think it was working before the injuries kind of took over, and
But then that third line was starting to show a little bit more too. After when they put Fiala back there with them, and so I don't know. I'm worried about that third and fourth line and how their production. But I digress. We move on.
Yeah. The Norris Trophy, and I think this is probably a top three pick in my opinion for league-wide. I'd go PK Subban for the Norris. I don't know exactly why he's not getting a whole lot of recognition for this on a national stage. I think in terms of the opposition he's playing each night, Subban is the shutdown defenseman. He is getting matched against the McDavids, the Crosbys, the Bessers, so what have you, and I think on top of that, he's producing the team's highest point. He has the team's highest points at the moment with 37. I just think that there's no way the league cannot be considering Subban, and yet it seems like perhaps they aren't. But is he even the best defenseman on the team, Corey, or do you have another choice here?
I'll keep it simple. Yes.
Subban for you as well.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's just a clear choice at this point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, no arguments for me. Perhaps arguments from George.
I had a feeling that everyone else was going to pick Matthias Ekholm, pick PK Subban, so I went with Matthias Ekholm just because.
Yeah.
To be different and a little contrarian, and is on pace for his highest point totals ever. He's playing very well. He played with Roman Josi. Now he's playing. He played with PK Subban. Now he's playing with like Matt Irwin. So he's quite versatile, and he's also playing a lot of PK minutes as well as a lot of power play minutes. So he's just kind of playing everywhere throughout the lineup. This year is really weird for trophies, especially for the Norris, because in my mind it's going to be given to John Klingberg over in Dallas. But
yeah,
like a lot of people were talking like, oh, he's not that good defensively, and I'm kind of like, when has that ever stopped? Like us talking
right,
about
it's highest point total from a defenseman, period.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Erik Karlsson a lot. I think that he's gotten much better defensively in the last 2 years, but you know, he's never been bad. But I never thought he was the best defenseman or the best complete defenseman. And then Drew Doughty got it, you know, when he was Doughty.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't think he was the best then. So I clearly just have no clear, you know, foresight into who is the best. It'll probably be Doughty again though, just because of how good the Kings have been if they make the playoffs. But you know, I'm holding out hope for my boy, Mark Edward Vlasic. So
right, yeah, I'm back to your roots.
He's the one shark I'll stand for.
There you go. Selke Trophy. So the best defensive offenseman.
I'm sorry. Do you mean the Patrice Bergeron Trophy?
Yes, I do mean the Patrice. Yeah. For those of us who aren't Bruins fans, yes, I do mean the Patrice Bergeron. And I mentioned my pick, I think, to George earlier, so I'm going to change it just to put you on your toes. And I'm going to give it to my secret favorite National Predator, Austin Watson, who just grinds it out night after night. Penalty kill, blocking shots, whatever you ask of Austin Watson defensively, he gets it done. I'm going to have to go with him for my Patrice Bergeron Trophy.
Let's catch it,
Corey.
I'm going to go Kyle Yarncroak because I simply think if I looked at the stats correctly, when he's on the ice, the Predators have outscored their opponents by 15 goals. Or 15, wow. Yeah. And so if you're thinking a defensive offenseman, then you're going to look for someone who is not only scoring on their end, but keeping the team's not allowing the opponent to score while they're on the ice as well. And I think that would be a great time to bring up Cal Yarncroak.
Yes, and I will admit that Yarncroak, I think, was my first choice, but for the sake of diversifying and also representing one of my favorite players, I went with for Watson. And George, my one of our fellow Yarncroak defenders, your thoughts on the Selke Trophy this year?
First off, it's going to be Yarncroak because wingers don't win Selkies. It's just the law of the land.
Yeah, that's fair.
If there was any justice, Marian Hossa would have gotten a few, but I digress. I actually put up Philip Forsberg because as good as he's been offensively, he's just actually incredibly good at not letting defenders in his own end, get shots or passes off. He's one of the better wingers in transition, and I talk a lot about how good he is at driving possession, and it goes both ways. He is one of the better two-way wingers in the sport, and he has the second best 5-on-5 goal differential right behind Kyle Yarncroak. And I mean, he's kind of grown. His path in hockey has not been as linear as one would prefer, but especially in this year, he's gotten so much better on his own end, and I think that he probably deserves to be recognized for it.
And who's your? Do you have a prediction for the actual trophy being given out?
Oh, yeah, Patrice Bergeron. Come on.
As is tradition.
Have you seen his goal differential?
No.
I think he's been on the ice for like 4 goals for the entire season.
Oh, man.
Oh, he's incredible. He's the best. I'm so glad that we figured out advanced stats so we can fully appreciate Patrice Bergeron.
The worst thing about Patrice Bergeron to me is he was in, I think, a Geico commercial in which he takes a face-off against himself.
Yeah.
But then the thing that bothers me is that the Patrice Bergeron that wins the face-off then goes and scores on his own net. So I realize that that's convoluted because they're both Patrice Bergeron, but I feel like they should still obey. Like, you can't just take a face-off and then turn around and go score on yourself and celebrate. I guess you could.
Is Patrice Bergeron a good enough shutdown center that he could shut down himself?
I think that's the point. It seems that he can't because he just turns around and scores on himself. So. Anyway, Art Ross, so the points leader at the end of the season, and I'm going to go with perhaps an underdog at this point right now. I'm going to go with 28-point Ryan Johansson. I think that that line that he is on will start stepping it up, and he will be very much a part of all of that. So I think he will come back. He's currently in 9 points behind PK Subban, but what the heck, I'm going to say he closes the gap and gets this in at the end of the day. Corey, feel free to disagree with me, and I imagine you probably will.
Actually, I was going to go Ryan Johansson as well.
No, you weren't.
Yes, actually I was, because I'm just waiting for Forsberg to get back and Johansson to gobble up a whole bunch of second assists. You know, I just want to see that happen. But instead of saying Johansson, because you already did, you know what? Let's go Arvidsson. Score a little bit more. He's always around the net. He's always doing something. So I he's got 15 goals and 15 assists right now. I can see him gathering up several more assists the second half of this season and winning the points race for the Predators this year.
All right. Yeah, you're right about Arvidsson always being around the dangerous areas. So if the pucks start falling right, I think that he's probably got a pretty good shot. And George, I imagine you laughed at my choice of Ryan Johansson. So. Why don't you explain your laughter?
The only reason I laughed was because I thought for sure you'd have him as your heart pick. But
no, believe it or not. Yeah, believe it or not, I don't.
I'm not surprised. I think I know who it might be. But yeah, I had Philip Forsberg. The lack of 5-on-5 scoring is a little disturbing to me, but just from where he is right now in 34 points in 37 games, it's kind of hard to argue that he'll probably be the leading point scorer. And quite frankly, I think he deserves it. We'll see how his zone usage goes over the next month that he comes back, just because of how the Jofa line without him has gotten less and less shelter and have started against better opposition. So I'm a little curious to see if they try to shelter him again to pick up scoring, but you know, we'll see.
And how about league wide?
Nikita Kucherov going away. 61 points in 48 games. I mean, come on.
Good grief.
Yeah, come on.
He's just the best.
He is.
All right, for the Hart Trophy, and this is the team MVP, I'm going to try something that will definitely be cringe-inducing, so just bear with me.
Oh, no.
I think we're going to do first name, last name, and all three of us are going to say it at the same time. So I can shame you if you're wrong. So,
you're be prepared to be shamed, because I know I'm not going to pick the same guys you all are.
Jeez, this is going to go well. For the sake of following through, on three, your team MVP, first name, last name. 1, 2, 3.
McLeod.
I heard a McLeod, and I think it was George. I'll ask you to take my experience and my experiment seriously, please.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
He's not even on the team anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just so happy. This is his biggest contribution to the team, was going somewhere else.
Come on.
This is the hill I die on.
He went to the big city, Elise. Yeah. I was happy about that.
The big city in the sky.
Sorry, Corey, who did you even say?
I was trying to say UC Soros, but you know.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, because like I would say Pekka, but I would think that the goaltending tandem kind of... more broadly is my MVP.
Well, if the goaltending tandem can't win a Conn Smythe in Pittsburgh, then a goaltending tandem can't win Hart.
It's not a true tandem. It's you know what I mean. Don't be pedantic with me.
Then why say it like that?
So Corey, I'm just gonna ignore George. Corey, why do you pick Saros specifically over Rene?
Well, Rene. Because of Saros, Rene has more time off to rest in between games. We're not wearing him out. I was worried at the beginning of the season that it was going to have to be Rene for like 65, 70 games and just get worn down by the time we get to playoffs. But now Saros has stepped up. He's got three shutouts in 12 games. Okay. Now, granted, well, some of the, most of those games came at the beginning of the season when he was faltering, but his goals against now is down to 2.35. His save percentage is up to 92.6%. I mean, he's because of his performance, the team is not having to rely on Pecorine, which means we're going to have more Pecorine in the playoffs. So it's simply because he has turned his season around, the Predators are where they are right now.
All right. Yeah, I like that logic, kind of the value of Saros being revealed through Pecorine. So, yeah, I mean, you can't ask anything more from your backup goaltender, in my opinion. He gives Nashville, I would argue, even more than just a chance to win every night, which is truly all you need from your goaltender. So, nice pick. And then, George, please, God, tell me your pick is not actually Cody McLeod and give me something I can actually discuss with you.
It's got to be Pecorine, right? Like,
okay, yeah, right.
I mean, I see the argument for Saros, and I like him. And I definitely think that there could be a better argument for him as the season goes on if he plays more games. But just with the sheer volume, you kind of have to give it to Rene. And
yeah.
Right. And of course, yeah, I knew you guys were going to pick Rene, so I had to go somewhere else just to have the sake of argument.
Well, you both decided to be very difficult at the same time, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Normally, at least one of you is. Yeah, well, yeah, you I can usually expect nothing from. Corey's usually a little nicer.
I didn't pull out Cody McLeod, come on.
No, that's just get out of here with that. Get out of here.
We hadn't mentioned...
Miss me with that. Yeah, we, kids say.
Wow, you're so hip. We totally missed out that he was waived. Like we didn't talk about it at all this podcast. Yeah. I was like, wow, that needs to come up.
Well, it kind of happened. Didn't it happen between episodes and then... he was gone before we even did the next one. So
to be fair, everything in life happens between episodes. Like
that's true. That's the really. Curse of the podcaster is things either happen right after you finish or just when it is not at all convenient to talk about them. Or in the case of the Terrace Strait happened, we had to try to carry on our normal itinerary, ignoring that.
Yeah.
George, who's your pick for Hart for the NHL?
Oh, Nathan MacKinnon. If the Colorado gets to the playoffs, it's solely off the back of Nathan MacKinnon and like maybe Mikko Rantanen. He's just so good. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I love him. I love Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see MacKinnon getting a really solid year. He was one of the very few players from that Colorado team I genuinely felt bad for last year.
And as a Predators fan, you can root for him because you know that they're not going to make. If they do make the playoffs, they're not deep enough to go past the first round. Like
right, yeah. They'll be kind of a Cinderella story, but it will end, in my opinion, quite quickly.
Yeah.
All right, I guess in the interest of time, we should probably pivot and look at the more immediate future, so the week ahead. Tuesday night, the big rival, the Chicago Blackhawks, coming into town. Then Thursday night, it's Los Angeles. And on Saturday, a rematch against the New York Rangers. So a very week of, I think, still solid, although somewhat faltering opponents. The Blackhawks especially, I think, the bottom feeders of the Central Division this year, although the Central is sort of a peg higher than the other divisions. So being worse than the Central is not necessarily such a bad thing. Corey, what do you think? The Blackhawks certainly always make it interesting. Do you think Nashville gets it done on Tuesday night on, I believe, national television, or will Chicago continue to be a thorn in their side?
This has a game where the Predators dominate written all over it to me. You know, Forsberg could be back. Corey Crawford is out. Even if Forsberg's not back, this is a game that the Predators should win. And win easily.
Yeah, I think this season, perhaps for the first time, I think Nashville has got to be the favorite in this matchup each time. And as you mentioned, Crawford being out, I think there was some talk of perhaps Crawford going on this trip with the team. So I guess it's possible that we would see him on Tuesday night. But I think more realistically, we're looking at Jeff Glass, who is kind of a nice story from a team that I don't really have a whole lot of nice stories about. Got to appreciate the contributions of 32-year-old Jeff Glass. George, you think is your typical pessimism leak into this game, or you think Nashville gets it done?
I don't know anymore. I probably think it's a good game. The Predators will make Jeff Glass look like an all-star, and they'll probably win like 1-0 or 2-1.
See, yeah, my prediction is 3-2 with no goals scored in the third period, and I'm quite specific about that, but I feel like that's how it usually goes down against Chicago.
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad one, actually. I like that. It's good.
Yeah. So 3-2 with all the goals being scored in the first 40 minutes. Los Angeles started off the season as one of the hotter teams in the West. Currently, they're slipping. They did give Nashville a pretty hard time. I think it took Victor Arvidsson breakaway goal in overtime to take the Kings down. Corey, you think that Nashville keeps it rolling, gets it done against Los Angeles, or do you think the Kings still have something left in the tank?
You know, I know Jonathan Quick is suspended for a game for not going to the All-Star festivities, so he's got an injury apparently, so he may or may not be back in. I think that has a lot to do with this one. If Quick is in net, then it's going to be a better game, but I still see this as a chance for Predators at home, building up some energy. I think this would be maybe a close game, but I think it's a Predators win.
Yeah, I think, of course, as I'm doing this on air, embarrassingly, I'm forgetting the name of their backup goaltender. George, do you happen to know it?
Darcy Kuemper, or Kuemper.
Thank you, Darcy Kuemper. And I believe that he was in net when they lost... They last played as the backup goaltender trend continues.
Another backup goaltender? Surprising.
Yeah, right. I know. That never happens. Yeah. George, speaking of, you think your deeply hated Los Angeles Kings, do you think Nashville takes them down or what?
I actually do think Nashville takes them down. The Kings have been trending downwards for quite a bit. 3-7 in their last 10, although they did win. They'll have a very tough challenge up against the Dallas Stars, and I'm a little curious to see how they do and how they kind of start off the second stretch, but you can never underestimate Anze Kopitar or Drew Doughty, especially when Doughty seemingly plays like 50 minutes a night. So if you go to the game, just watch Doughty the entire night, because he goes off and 10 seconds later he comes right back on. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before. So yeah, I do think that the Predators win this one, and I think that especially if Quick doesn't play, I think they win quite handedly. But if they do, but if Quick does, I still think that they pull it off.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I don't think LA is nearly the competition that they were earlier in the season, and I think if Nashville can kind of keep their heads down and get the job done, I think this should be a pretty simple 2 points for them. And then on Saturday night against the New York Rangers, who to my memory, the Nashville has lost the past three at least meetings with the New York Rangers. For whatever reason, that's just a team they can't seem to shake with Jimmy Vesey and company. Corey, what are your thoughts on this one? Is this does Nashville finally kind of buck the trend, or does New York continue to take this one?
The only thing that really bothers me about New York is their top 10 scores are all offensive, all forwards, and all of them, I mean, all but one of them is a center. So I mean, can the defense keep them away from the danger zone enough to keep the score close? I think they can. I think the Predators will score enough as well. I'm actually seeing this being a 6-point week for the team.
Wow. Yeah, I could see that too. I think it's going to be. I can just predict that at least one and perhaps two of these matchups is really going to give them a hard time. I can't tell you exactly which ones that would be. George, you think the Rangers are still a big threat, or do you think this is a game Nashville should grab too?
I mean, the Rangers still have the King, right? So anything could happen.
Yeah, who's having as you mentioned, I think one of the two teams higher than Nashville in high danger save percentage is the New York Rangers with Lundqvist.
Yeah. I like them. I think that it's going to be Nashville, so I'd probably give the edge to the Predators. But I mean, Mika Zibanejad's having a really good season. Rick Nash is kind of getting hot, and that's going to be really big for his trade value. So we'll see how that goes. But I kind of see the season as the last season where the Rangers had before they kind of get into their rebuild. A lot of guys didn't pan out the way they thought they would, and while this team has some decent prospects, Elias Anderson being one of them, I think that they're going to start to lose more games than they win. And I think this is probably going to be a game that the Rangers lose.
And another thing with this game, though, is it's New York's second game after the All-Star break. They play Toronto at home on the first, and they come to Nashville right after that. So I don't know if we're going to see Lundqvist the game here in Nashville. I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't in net that day.
Another backup goaltender.
just it's state the theme. Andrei
Pavlik. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
All right. Well, well spotted, Corey, because it's always interesting to me when teams play back-to-backs with the second one being against Nashville. It's always interesting to see who chooses to sit the starter for the Nashville game. And I was, for example, particularly surprised that we saw Louis Domingue in net and Vasilevsky in Chicago the night before, but it worked out for Tampa, so I cannot fault them for that. Anyhow, I guess we're about out of time, so Corey, why don't you let us know where we can read and hear more of your work?
Of course, you've got me on Predlines. I try to post it rather regularly when I can. Then I have my own website at jcoreyfrancis.com, which is geared towards music and music education. And then also find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at jcoreyfrancis. Post on those things quite often.
All right. And George?
Yeah, find me on Predlines. I write quite often. And then find me on Twitter at georgem1019. The G and the M are capitalized as always, and I'm a lot of fun just for the retweets. So,
Wow, self-promotion there. Yeah. I'm a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Shameless. For me, you can obviously find me on predlines.com. I don't post quite as often as I'm not required to, which is nice. And you can find me on Twitter at WadeM1994.
WadeM.
There it is. Finally got the timing down.
Yeah.
And if you follow me on Twitter, you'll be in a very exclusive group of individuals. I can't promise you'll enjoy it, but there you go. Aside from that, we will hopefully have you listeners back next week for another episode.